"He might," said Crocodile Dongo, looking concerned. Mincewind shuddered. "You're right," he said. "It's the heat of the flies getting to me. It must be." Dongo poured him another beer. "Ah, well, beer's good for the heat," he said. "Can't do anything about the bloody flies, though." Rincewind started a nod and stopped. He removed his hat and looked at it critically. Then he waved a hand up and down in front of his face, temporarily dislodging a few flies. Finally, he looked thoughtfully at a row of bottles. "Got any string?" he said. After a few experiments and some mild concussion, Dongo advanced the opinion that it'd be better with just the corks. The luggage was lost. Usually it could find its way anywhere in time and space, but trying to do that now was like a man trying to keep his footing on two moving walkways heading in opposite directions, and it simply couldn't cope. It knew it had been stuck underground for a long time, but it also knew that it had been stuck underground for about 5 minutes. The luggage had no brain as such, even though an outsider might well get the impression that it could think. What it did do was react, in quite complex ways, to its environment. Usually this involved finding something to kick, as is the case with most sapient creatures. Currently it was ambling along a dusty track. Occasionally its lid would snap at flies, but without much enthusiasm. Its opal coating glowed in the sunlight.
"Oh, isn't that pretty? Fetch it here, you two."
It paid no attention to the brightly coloured cart that stopped a little way along the track. It was possibly aware at some level that people had got out and were staring at it, but it didn't resist when they appeared to reach a decision and lifted it onto the cart. It didn't know where it had to go, and since it also didn't know where this cart was going, perhaps it would take it there. It waited a decent while after it had been put down, and then took in its surroundings. It had been stacked up by a lot of other boxes and suitcases, which was comforting. After 5 minutes spent being underground for millions of years, the luggage felt that it was due some quality time. And it didn't even resist when someone opened its lid and filled it up with shoes. Quite large shoes, the luggage noticed, and many of them with interesting heels and inventive ways with silk and sequins. They were clearly ladies' shoes. That was good, the luggage thought, or emoted, or reacted. Ladies tended to lead quieter lives. The purple cart rumbled off, painted crudely on the back with the words, "Petunia, the Desert Princess." Rincewind looked hard at the shears that the head shearer was waving. They looked sharp.
"You know what we do to people who go back on a bet round here?" said Daggy, the gang boss.
But I was drunk."
"So were we. So what?"
Rincewind looked out across the sheep pens. He knew what sheep were, of course, and had come into contact with them on many occasions, although normally in the company of mixed vegetables. He'd even had a toy stuffed lamb as a child. But there is something hugely unlovable about sheep, a kind of mad, eye-rolling brainlessness smelling of damp wool and panic. Many religions extol the virtues of the meek, but Rincewind had never trusted them. The meek could turn very nasty at times. On the other hand, they were covered in wool, and the shears looked pretty keen. How hard could it be? His radar told him that trying and failing was probably a lot less of a crime than not trying at all. "Can I have a trial run?" he said. A sheep was dragged out of the pens and flung down in front of him. Rincewind gave Daggy what he hoped was the smile of one craftsman to another, but smiling at Daggy was like throwing meringues against a cliff. "Can I have a chair and a towel and two mirrors and a comb?" he said. Daggy's look of intense suspicion deepened.
"What's this? What do you want all that for?"
Got to do it properly, haven't I?"
Away, out of sight, at the back of the shearing shed, on the sun-bleached boards, the outline of a kangaroo began to form. And then, the white lines drifting across the wood like wisps of cloud across a clear sky, it began to change shape. Rincewind hadn't had a proper haircut in a long time, but he knew how it was done.
"So, have you had your holidays this year, then?" he said, clipping away. "What about this weather, eh?" Rincewind said desperately.
The sheep wasn't even trying to struggle. It was an old one, with fewer teeth than feet, and even in the very limited depths of its extremely shallow mind, it knew that this wasn't how shearing was supposed to go. Shearing was supposed to be a brief struggle followed by a glorious, cool freedom back in the paddock. It wasn't supposed to include searching questions about what it thought of this weather, or inquiries as to whether it required something for the weekend, especially since the sheep had no concept of the connotations of the term weekend, or if it came to that, of the word something either. People weren't supposed to splash lavender water in its ear. The shearers watched in silence. There was quite a crowd of them, because they'd gone and fetched everyone else on the station. They knew in their souls that here was something to tell their grandchildren. Rincewind stood back, looked critically at his handiwork, and then showed the sheep the back of its head in the mirror, at which point the creature cracked, managed to get its feet under it, and made a run for the paddock. "Hey, wait till I take the curlers out!" Rincewind shouted after it. He became aware of the shearers watching him. Finally, one of them said, in a stunned voice, "That's sheep shearing where you come from, is it?"
What did you think?" said Rincewind.
"It's a bit slow, isn't it?
How fast was I supposed to go?"
"Well, Daggy here once nearly did 50 in an hour. That's what you got to beat, see? None of that fancy rubbish. Just short back, front, top and sides."
"Mind you," said one of the shearers wistfully, "that was a beautiful looking sheep."
There was an outbreak of bleating from the sheep corrals.
"Ready to give it a real go, Rinso?" said Daggy. "Ye gods, what's that?"
said one of his mates. The fence shattered. A ram stood in the gap, shaking its head to dislodge bits of post from its horns. Steam rose from its nostrils. Most of the things Rincewind had associated with sheep, apart from the gravy and mint sauce, had to do with sheepishness. But this was a ram, and the word association was suddenly rampage. It pawed the ground. It was a lot bigger than the average sheep. In fact, it seemed to fill Rincewind's entire future.
"That's not one of mine," said the flock's owner.
Daggy placed his shears in Rincewind's other hand and patted him on the back.
"This one's yours, mate," he said, and backed away. "You're here to show us how it's done, eh, mate?"
Rincewind looked down at his feet. They weren't moving. They remained firmly fixed to the ground. The ram advanced, snorting and looking Rincewind in the bloodshot eye.
"Okay," it whispered when it was very close. "You just mate with the shears, and the sheep will do the rest. No worries."
"Is that you?" said Rincewind, glancing at the distant ring of watchers.
"Eh, good one. Ready? They'll do what I do. They're like sheep, okay?"
The shearers watched as wool fell like rain.
"That's something you don't often see," said one of them. "Them standing on their heads like that."
"The cartwheels is good," said another shearer, lighting his pipe. "I mean, for sheep."
End of side 8. Side 9. Rincewind just hung on to the shears. They had a life of their own. The sheep flung themselves against the clippers as if in a real hurry to get into something more comfortable. Fleeces curled around his ankles, then around his knees, rose above his waist, and then the shears were slicing the air and sizzling as they cooled down. Several dozen dazed sheep were watching him very suspiciously. So were the sheep shearers.
"Have we started the competition yet?" he said.
"You just sheared 30 sheep in 2 minutes," roared Daggy.
"Is that good?"
"Good? No one takes 2 minutes for 30 sheep."
"Well, I'm sorry, but I can't go any faster."
The shearers went into a huddle. Rincewind looked around for the ram, but it didn't seem to be there anymore. Finally, something seemed to have been settled. The shearers approached him in the cautious, oblique way of men trying to hang back and walk forward at the same time. Daggy stepped forward, but only comparatively. In fact, his mates had all, without discussion, taken one step backwards in the choreography of caution.
"Good day," he said nervously.
Rincewind gave him a friendly wave, and it was only halfway through when he remembered that he was still holding the shears. Daggy hadn't forgotten about them.
"We ain't got 500 squids till we get paid."
Rincewind wasn't certain how to deal with this.
"No worries," he said.
This covered most things.
"So, if you're gonna be around..."
"I just want to get to Bugger Up as soon as possible," said Rincewind.
Daggy kept smiling, but turned around and went into another huddle with the rest of the shearers. Then he turned back.
Maybe we could sell a few things.
I'm not bothered about the money, actually, said Rincewind loudly. Just point me in the direction of Bugger Up. No worries.
You don't want the money?
No worries.
There was another huddle. Rincewind heard hissed comments of,
get him out of here right now.
Daggy turned back.
I got a horse you can have, he said. It's worth a squid or two.
No worries.
And then you'll be able to ride away?
She'll be right. No worries.
It was an amazing phrase. It was practically magical all by itself. It just made things better. A shark's got your leg?
No worries.
You've been stung by a jellyfish?
No worries.
You're dead?
She'll be right. No worries.
Oddly enough, it seemed to work.
No worries, he said again.
Gotta be worth a squid or two, that horse, Daggy said again. Practically a bloody racehorse.
There was some sniggering from the crowd.
No worries, said Rincewind.
Daggy looked for a moment as if he was entertaining the suggestion that maybe the horse was worth more than 500 squid, but Rincewind was still dreamily holding on to the shears, and he thought the better of it.
Get you to Bugger Up in no time, that horse, he said.
No worries.
A couple of minutes later, it was obvious even to Rincewind's inexperienced eye that while you could race this horse, it wouldn't be sensible to race it against other horses, at least ones that were alive. It was brown, stubby, mostly a thatch of mane, with hooves the size of soup bowls, and it had the shortest legs Rincewind had ever seen on anything with a saddle. The only way you could fall off would be to dig a hole in the ground first. It looked ideal. It was Rincewind's kind of horse.
No worries, he said. Actually, one small worry.
He dropped the shears. The shearers took a step back. Rincewind went over to the corral and looked down at the ground, which was churned from the hoofprints of the sheep. Then he looked at the back of the shearing shed. For a moment, he was sure there was the outline of a kangaroo. The shearers approached him cautiously as he banged on the sun-bleached planks, shouting,
I know you're in there!
That's what we call wood, said Daggy. Wood, he added, for the hard of thinking. Made into a wall.
Did you see a kangaroo walk into this wall? Rincewind demanded.
Not us, boss.
It was a sheep at the time, Rincewind added. I mean, it's normally a kangaroo, but I'll swear it turned into that sheep.
The shearers shuffled uneasily.
You're not going to say anything about woolly jumpers, are you?
Said one, almost timorously.
What? What's knitwear got to do with it?
That's a mercy anyway,
the small shearer mumbled.
You know, it's been doing that all the time, said Rincewind. I thought there was something wrong with that beer poster.
Something wrong with a beer, too?
I'm not putting up with any more kangaroo nonsense. I'm off home, said Rincewind. Where's that horse?
It was standing where they left it. He waved a finger at it.
And no talking, he said as he swung his leg over it. This simply resulted in him standing over the horse.
He was sure that somewhere under the overhanging mane, something sniggered.
You gotta kind of sag down, said Daggy, and then you kind of lifts your legs kind of up.
Rincewind did so. It was like sitting on an armchair.
You sure this is a horse?
Won it in a game of two up from a bloke from Goolala, said Daggy. Gotta be tough coming from the mountains. They breeds them special to be sure-footed. He said it wouldn't fall off anything.
Rincewind nodded. His type of horse, all right. The quiet, dependable type.
Which way's Bugger Up?
The men pointed.
Right. Thank you. Giddy up. What's this horse called?
Daggy seemed to think for a moment and then said,
Snowy.
Why Snowy? That's an odd name for a horse.
I used to have a dog called Snowy.
Oh, right. That makes sense. Sense for here, anyway, I suppose. Well, good day, then.
The shearers watched him go, which, at Snowy's pace, took some time.
Had to get rid of him, said Daggy. He could put us on the dole in a day.
One of the men said,
Why didn't you tell him about the drop bears over that way? He's a wizard, ain't he? He'll find out. Yeah, but only when they bloody drop on his head. Quickest way, said Daggy. Daggy?
Yep.
How long did you say you'd had that horse?
Ages. Won it off a bloke.
Right?
Right.
Right.
What?
Only, did you always have it ages half an hour ago? Daggy's wide brow furrowed a little. He took off his hat and wiped his head with his arm. He looked at the disappearing horse, and then at the sheds, and then at the other men. Several times he started to speak, shut his mouth before he could get the first word out, and glared around him again. "You all know I've had it for bloody ages, right?" he demanded. "Yes, right. Ages. Won it off a bloke. Right, yeah, right. You must have done." Mrs. Whitlow sat on a rock, combing her hair. A bush had sprouted several twigs with rows of blunt, closely set thorns, just when she needed them. Large, pink, and very clean, she relaxed by the water like an amplified siren. Birds sang in the trees, sparkling beetles hummed to and fro across the water. If the senior wrangler had been present, someone could have scraped him up and carried him away in a bucket. Mrs. Whitlow did not feel in any danger. The wizards were around, after all. She was mildly worried that the maids would be getting lazy since she wasn't there, but she could look forward to making their lives a living hell when she got back. The possibility of not getting back never entered her head. A lot of things never entered Mrs. Whitlow's head. She'd decided a long time ago that the world was a lot nicer that way. She had a very straightforward view of foreign parts, or at least those more distant than her sister's house in Quirm, where she spent a week's holiday every year. They were inhabited by people who were more to be pitied than blamed, because really, they were like children. That is to say, she secretly considered them to be vicious, selfish, and untrustworthy. And they acted like savages. Again, when people like Mrs. Whitlow use this term, they are not for some inexplicable reason trying to suggest that the subjects have a rich oral tradition, a complex system of tribal rites, and a deep respect for the spirits of their ancestors. They are implying the kind of behaviour more generally associated, oddly enough, with people wearing a full suit of clothes, often with the same insignia. On the other hand, the scenery was nice, and the weather was warm, and nothing smelled very bad. She was definitely feeling the benefit, as she'd put it. Not to put too fine a point on it, Mrs. Whitlow had left her corsets off. The thing that the senior wrangler insisted on calling the melon boat was, even the dean admitted, very impressive. There was a big space below deck, dark and veined and lined with curved black boards, very like giant sunflower seeds. "Boat seeds," said the Arch-Chancellor. "Probably make good ballast. Senior wrangler, don't eat the wall, please." "I thought perhaps we could do with more cabin space," said the senior wrangler. "Cabins, possibly. State rooms, no," said Ridcully, heaving himself back onto the deck. "Avast, shipmate," shouted the dean, throwing a bunch of bananas onto the boat and climbing up behind them. "Quite so. How do we sail this vegetable, dean?" "Oh, Ponder Stibbons knows all about that sort of thing. And where is he? Didn't he go off to fetch some bananas?" They looked down at the beach where the bursar was stockpiling seaweed. "He did seem a bit, upset," said Ridcully. "Can't imagine why." Ridcully glanced up at the central mountain, glowing in the afternoon sun. "I suppose he wouldn't have done anything, stupid, would he?" he said. "Arch-Chancellor, Ponder Stibbons is a fully trained wizard," said the dean. "Thank you for that very concise and definite answer, dean," said Ridcully. He leaned down into the cabin. "Senior Wrangler, we're going to look for Stibbons, and we ought to go and fetch Mrs. Whitlow, too." There was a shriek from below. "Mrs. Whitlow! How could we have forgotten her?" "In your case, only by having a cold bath, Senior Wrangler." As horses went, this one went slowly. It moved in a stolid, I-can-do-this-all-day manner that clearly said the only way you get me to go faster will be to push me off a cliff. It had a curious gait, somewhere faster than a trot but slower than a canter. The effect was a jolting slightly out of synchronization with the moment of inertia in any known human organ, causing everything inside Rincewind to bounce off everything else. Also, if he forgot for a second and lowered his legs, Snowy went on without him, and this meant that he had to run ahead and stand there like a croquet hoop until he caught him up. But Snowy didn't bite, buck, roll over, or gallop insanely away, which were the traits Rincewind had hitherto associated with horses. When Rincewind stopped for the night, the horse wandered off a little way and ate a bush covered with leaves the thickness, smell, and apparent edibility of linoleum. He camped beside what he had heard called a billabong, which was just an expanse of churned earth with a tiny puddle of water welling up in the middle.
Little green and blue birds were clustered around it, cheeping happily in the late afternoon light. They scattered when Rincewind lay down to drink and scolded him from the trees. When he sat up, one of them landed on his finger. "Who's a pretty boy, then?" said Rincewind. The noise stopped. Up on the branches, the birds looked at one another. There wasn't much room in their heads for a new idea, but one had just turned up. The sun dropped towards the horizon. Rincewind poked very cautiously inside a hollow log and found a ham sandwich and a plate of cocktail sausages. Up in the trees, the budgerigars were in a huddle. One of them said, very quietly, "Who?" Rincewind lay back. Even the flies were merely annoying. Things began to sizzle in the bushes. Snowy went and drank from the tiny pool with a noise like an inefficient suction pump trying to deal with an unlucky turtle. It was, nevertheless, very peaceful. Rincewind? He knew what was about to happen when things were peaceful. Up in the darkening branches, a bird muttered,
"Pretty boy?"
He relaxed, but only a little.
"Who's a pretty boy?"
Suddenly the bird stopped. A branch creaked. The drop bear dropped. It was a close relative of the koala, although this doesn't mean very much. After all, the closest relative of the common elephant is about the size and shape of a rabbit. The drop bear's most notable feature was its posterior, thick and heavily padded to provide the maximum shock to the victim with the minimum shock to the bear. The initial blow rendered the prey unconscious, and then the bears could gather round to feed. It was a magnificent method of killing, since in other respects the bears were not very well built to be serious predators, and it was therefore particularly unfortunate for this bear that it chose on this night to drop on a man who might well have had "victim" written all over him, but also had "wizard" written on his hat, and that this hat, most significantly, came to a point. Rincewind lumbered to his feet and ran into a few trees while he tried with both hands on the brim to lift his hat off his head. He managed it at last, stared in horror at the bear and its peculiarly confused expression, and shook it off and into the bushes. There were thumps around him as more bears, disoriented by this turn of events, hit the ground and bounced wildly. In the trees, the budgerigars woke up, and the simple message, by now having had time to work its way into their brain cells, shrieked,
"Who's the pretty boy, then?"
A madly tumbling bear whirled past Rincewind's face. Rincewind turned and ran towards Snowy, landing astride the horse's back, or where its back would have been had it been taller. Snowy obediently broke into his arrhythmical trot and headed into the darkness. Rincewind looked down, swore, and ran after his horse. He held on tight as Snowy ran on like some small engine, leaving the bouncing bears behind, and didn't slow down until he was well away along the track and among bushes that were shorter than he was. Then he slid off. What a bloody country! There was a flurry of wings in the night, and suddenly the bush was full of little birds.
"Here's a pretty boy, then!"
Rincewind waved his hat at them and screamed a little just to relieve his feelings. It didn't work. The budgerigars thought this was some sort of entertainment.
"Bugger off!"
they twittered. Rincewind gave up, stamped on the ground a few times, and tried to sleep. When he awoke, it was to a sound very much like a donkey being sawn in half. It was a kind of rhythmic scream of pain, anguished and forlorn, setting the teeth of the world on edge. Rincewind raised his head cautiously over the scrub. A windmill was spinning in the breeze, turning this way and that, as stray gusts battered its tail fin. Rincewind was seeing more of these dotted across the landscape and thought, if all the water's underground, that's a good idea. There was a mob of sheep hanging around the base of this one. They didn't back off, but watched him carefully as he approached. He saw why. The trough below the pump was empty. The fan was spinning, grinding out its mournful squeak, but no water was coming out of the pipe. The thirsty sheep looked up at him.
Don't look at me, he mumbled. I'm a wizard. We're not supposed to be good at machinery.
No, but we are supposed to be good at magic, said an accusing voice in his head.
Maybe I can see if something's come loose, though, or something, he muttered.
Impelled by the vaguely accusing woolly stares, he clambered up the rickety tower and tried to look efficient. There didn't seem to be anything wrong, except that the metallic groaning was getting louder.
Can't see anything.
Something that had finally been tortured beyond endurance broke somewhere down in the tower. It shook, and the windmill spun free, dragging a broken rod which smashed heavily on the windmill's casing with every revolution. Rincewind half fell, half slid back down to the ground.
Seems to be a bit of a technical fault, he mumbled. A lump of cast iron smashed into the sand by his feet. Probably needs to be seen to by a qualified artificer. Probably invalidates the warranty if I mess around. A cracking noise from overhead made him dive for cover, which in this case was a rather surprised sheep. When the racket had died away, the windmill's fan was bowling over through the scrub. As for the rest of it, if there had ever been any user-serviceable parts inside, they very clearly weren't in there any more. Rincewind took off his hat to mop his brow, but he wasn't quick enough. A pink tongue rasped across his forehead like damp sandpaper. Ow! Good grief, you lot really are thirsty, aren't you? He pulled the hat back on, right down to his ears, just to be on the safe side. I could do with a drink myself, to tell the truth. He managed, after pushing a few sheep aside, to find a piece of broken windmill. Wading with some difficulty through the press of silent bodies, he made his way to an area that was a little lower than the surrounding scrub and contained a couple of trees whose leaves looked slightly fresher than the rest.
Oh, good grief!
Chattered the birds around him. 2 or 3 feet should do it, he thought, as he shoveled the red soil aside. Amazing, really, all this water underground when it never rained at all. The whole place must be floating on water. At 3 feet down, the soil was barely damp. He sighed and kept going. He was more than chest-deep before a trickle oozed out between his toes. The sheep fought for the damp soil as he threw it up to the surface. As he watched, the puddle sank into the ground. Hey, come back!
Hey, come back!
Screamed the birds in the bushes. Shut up!
Shut up! Who's a pretty boy, then?
He flailed at the ground with his makeshift shovel in an effort to catch up, and overtook the descending water after another few inches. He splashed on until he was knee-deep, dragged his hat through the muddy liquid, pulled himself out of the hole, and ran, water dribbling over his feet, until he could tip it into the trough. The sheep clustered round it, struggling silently to get at the film of moisture. Rincewind got 2 more hatfuls before the water sank out of sight. He wrenched the ladder off the stricken windmill, threw it down the hole, and jumped in after it. Damp soil fountained out as he dug, and each dripping lump attracted a mass of flies and small birds as soon as it hit the ground. He managed another 12 or so hatfuls before the hole was deeper than the ladder. By now some cattle had lumbered up to the trough as well, and it was impossible to see the water for heads. The sound was that of a straw investigating the suds of the biggest milkshake in the world. Rincewind took a final look down the hole, and as he did so the last drop of water winked out of sight. Weird country, he muttered. He wandered over to where Snowy was standing patiently in the sparse shade of a bush. You're not thirsty, he said. Snowy snorted and shook his mane. Oh, well, maybe you've got a bit of camel in you. You certainly can't be all horse, I know that. Snowy moved aimlessly sideways and trod on Rincewind's foot. By noon, the track crossed another one, which was much wider. Hoofprints and wheel ruts suggested that it got a lot of traffic. Rincewind brightened up and followed it through thickening trees, glad of the shade. He passed another groaning windmill surrounded by a cluster of patiently waiting cattle. There were more bushes, and the land was rising into ancient crumbling hills of orange rock. At least he gets the wind up here, he thought. Ye gods, is a drop of rain too much to ask? You can't never have any rain. Everywhere gets rained on sometimes. It has to drop out of the sky in order to get underground in the first place, doesn't it? He stopped when he heard the sound of many hoofbeats on the track behind him. A mob of riderless horses appeared around the bend at full gallop. As they swept past Rincewind, he saw one horse out in front of the others, built on the sleekest lines he'd ever seen, a horse that moved as though it had a special arrangement with gravity. The pack divided and flowed around Rincewind as if he were a rock in a stream. Then they were just a disappearing noise in a cloud of red dust. Snowy's nostrils flared, and the jolting increased as he speeded up. Oh, yes, said Rincewind, not a chance, mate. You can't play with the big boys. No worries. The cloud of dust had barely settled before there were more hoofbeats and a bunch of horsemen came around the curve. They galloped past without taking any notice of Rincewind, but a rider at the rear slowed down.
You seen a mob of horses go by, mate?
Yes, mate, no worries. No worries, no worries.
A big brown colt leading them?
Yes, mate, no worries, no worries.
Old Remorse says he'll give 100 squids to the man who catches him. No chance of that, it's canyon country ahead.
No worries?
What's that you're riding, an ironing board?
Excuse me, Rincewind began as the man set off in pursuit, but is this the right road to bugger up? The dust swirled across the road. What happened to the well-known Exian reputation for good-hearted friendliness, eh? Shouted Rincewind to empty air.
He heard shouts and the cracking of whips from the trees on the high slopes as he wound into the hills. At one point, the wild horses burst out onto the track again, not even noticing him in their flight, and this time Snowy and